Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ian Pickus, sitting in today for Mr. Met, and we'll be discussing comics and sports cards with Bill Townsend of Electric City Comics and Al Itzkoff of Al's House of Sports Cards in Schenectady. Bill founded Electric City Comics in 1982. It's one of the oldest comic shops in upstate New York, and Bill was an advisor to the Overstreet comic book price guide update and has some experience on the other side of the publishing chain as a comic book writer. Al has been an avid sports card collector all his life. He's the sole proprietor of Al's House of Sports Cards, and his shop carries complete card sets and sports memorabilia. If you have questions, the number to call is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, and you can email in your questions to voxpop@wamc.org. Bill and Al, welcome back to Vox Pop.
Hey, good afternoon. How are you?
Doing great. I'm excited to have a chance to do the sports and comics show. So what's new in your respective worlds of collecting? Al, we'll start with you.
Hey, everybody's looking for Ohtani, Judge, even this new kid, Kyle Riley, for the Mariners, catcher.
Yeah, he won the home run derby this week. Yeah,
very special. He's got set a record with 10 stolen bases. You know, that doesn't happen a lot for catchers. Only like three catchers did that. My friend told me that today. Very rare feat. Ivan Rodriguez, I did it, and Carlton Fisk did it.
Yeah, that's a pretty heady company to be in.
Yeah, 10 stolen bases for a catcher is huge.
So let me ask you this. If I'm getting into sports card collecting, is, a fairly new Mariner catcher who's having an amazing first half of the year, is that a good idea for a card to invest in and buy and hold on to? Does he have a high upside?
I mean, a lot of people I talk to, they think he's very talented, he's going to be okay. And then some people say, oh, it's a one-hit wonder, you know. But you got to collect what you like. And if you think he's going to be decent, buy his stuff. Just don't go crazy. Start spending, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars of all these one-of-one cards. And because, I mean, at the end of the day, you're taking a chance. So I would take baby steps.
And it's been a while since I was buying new wax packs, I'll be honest, although I do have several thousand stored away.
Sure.
What's the best way to actually get a card? Like, let's say you wanted to pick up one of his cards these days. Do I buy individual tops and rifle through? How am I going to do it?
Yeah, some people buy packs and they go through them and get their favorite players and just really collect what you like. Or you can go to a card show. Any shop, you know, will do. You can come to me. We can look for that card. I mean, it's your preference, really. And you can buy, you know, there's affordable rookie cards. You don't have to spend thousands of dollars. You can buy a base card for a couple dollars, or you can buy a numbered card for a little bit more. My suggestion is baby steps. Just, you know, buy what you like and what you can afford. Don't go crazy and, you know, remortgage your house to buy these rookie cards.
That is great advice.
That's, you know, don't go nuts. I mean, if you're going to do that, buy a Nolan Ryan rookie card or something, or something, you know, that's going to hold its value, an established legend.
Right, and not a tainted player whose reputation might be waxing and waning.
Yeah.
So we had the baseball All-Star game this week. We had the Home Run Derby.
Yes.
And in the comics world, we've got a new Superman movie, so it's happening.
Absolutely.
Have you seen it yet?
No, I have not, but I've been hearing lots of good things about it.
Any plans?
No concrete plans. Maybe this weekend I'll see it.
Okay.
It's been a while since I've been in a theater, so...
And is Superman one of, in terms of comics, is that something that holds its value over time, or do we see interest kind of come and go?
He's an iconic character. I don't know if you know this, but there are a bunch of coins being issued by the Mint with Superman and Batman on them.
Oh, no, I didn't see that.
Yeah, I mean, it's like Superman is on a coin now. I've seen it myself.
So these won't be in wide circulation. They're going to be a special line, or
yeah, they're a special thing. You have to order them from the Mint.
Got it.
But it's a bullion coin, and it's also available in gold if you want to spend $3,300.
Yeah,
and bet against Bitcoin, I guess.
Yeah.
So what else is new in the world of comics these days?
Well, there's some things going on. I was just talking about it with Al. Something that a lot of people don't realize. All comics are printed in Canada.
Oh, interesting.
In fact, almost all magazines are printed in Canada.
And why is that?
There is an enormous printing plant outside of Montreal called Quad Graphics. It literally is a city unto itself. It has its own power plant.
I remember seeing the local Quad Graphics plant in Saratoga Springs on a field trip. Yeah,
yeah. Then and that went out. So essentially, all comics are printed in Canada. And so any tariffs, if there's going to be a 30% tariff against Canadian goods, that's going to really hurt. And who it's really going to hurt are Canadian comic store owners, because all comics are printed in Canada, but they're distributed in the United States. So all their comics would have to go over the border and then be distributed back to them. So you get hit by tariffs both ways.
Oh, no. Oh, so all of a sudden, you're looking at, you know, something that should be affordable and maybe not being.
Yeah, there is a very real chance that if the 30% tariffs hit, comic cover prices will double.
Yikes.
Yeah, yikes is right.
Yikes.
Is there a certain title that's getting a lot of attention these days? I mean, separate from the obvious Superman and Iron Man, I assume.
Well, every summer, it's like a tradition. There is a big, Marvel does a big crossover. And this summer's crossover is called Imperial, and it's doing better than we thought it would.
Oh, really?
So there's that. The thing is that the big summer crossover is kind of a relic of the past, because when kids were out of school and they had like summer jobs, they would be buying more comics. You'd see them in the store more often.
Right.
That hasn't been the case for decades.
Oh, really? You don't get the summer boom?
Not really. Not really.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I think it's mainly because the readership of comics is not high school kids anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's people going into their 30s, 40s, and 50s. And I don't know about you, I didn't get the summer off.
Right. Wouldn't that be nice?
Wouldn't it be nice? It's like, 3 months to just kick back and hang out by the pool. It's like, no, us adults can't do that.
So here's a question for you, because I've been trying to speak with, you know, kids in their teens who speak a different language than I do, it seems. And they're into YouTube videos. They're into video games. And a lot of times they'll watch, you know, a YouTube video of somebody else playing a game for hours and hours. And has that translated and intersected with comics? Like, do we see a lot of crossover between Fortnite and Minecraft with the printed page?
There was a couple years ago, there was a Fortnite comic book where there was, I think it was Fortnite, where there was a skin. If you bought the comic, there was a code that came with every comic because it was bagged. And you would have like a Batman skin. Your current character could be dressed as Batman, or it could be dressed as Catwoman or something like that. So occasionally there's crossovers. And there's all sorts of comic book adaptations of video games. It's all part of kind of the overall media landscape. For instance, there's a Fortnite movie right now.
Right.
But, I mean, how much does a Fortnite movie have in common with a Fortnite game? It's kind of like some years ago somebody said, it's like, if you're a big fan of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, mm-hmm. does that mean you want to eat the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles breakfast cereal?
Well, maybe.
Well, but no, it's a breakfast cereal. It's like, if you like breakfast cereals, maybe you'll like it. But if you don't like breakfast cereals, I'm wasting my time talking to you about it.
You know, I have an origin story with that, where I don't think I liked pizza until the Turtles made it cool. And then all of a sudden, yeah. And I had two slices before the show. So I don't know.
Well, I mean,
I was impressionable.
The story behind the Turtles is Eastman and Laird were at a pizza place and they were waiting for their food. And they just kind of doodled on a napkin. It's like...
Was that in Western Mass?
Yes.
Yeah, they have origins there, right?
Yes. Or maybe Vermont.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, Teenage Mutant Ninja characters were really big in the early 1980s. And so they said, what if we made Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles? And they just kind of ran with it.
And I like how these things kind of, they go through cycles, they get reimagined, they get rebooted. So it's like, they never really go away, even if they're in a new iteration. Let's hit one of the phones before we take our first break on the show.
Sure.
And we've got, I think, Jeffrey calling from Hobart, New York. Jeffrey, you're on with Bill and Al.
Yes, I recently got as a present a cool Mickey Mantle mug in a little box. It's got pinstripes and old-time baseball people on it, and on the back of the mug, it's got his stats and everything. I don't know where it came from, but it's very cool. I was wondering if there's any, like, what is it, where did this come from?
most likely, how you doing? How are you today? Most likely that came... very good. Listen, most likely that probably came from the stadium in their souvenir shop, or it could have been sold
right
through Cooperstown. Somebody went through to look at the museum. They have a gift shop.
Oh, I've been to Cooperstown many times. It's right down the road from me.
Oh, nice. Yeah. It's enjoyable there.
Yeah.
Is Mickey Mantle, he seems to be one who has a lasting command on boomers who grew up with him as their idol. Is he one that people are always tracking down still?
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's very iconic. I mean, Mickey Mantle is like American Pie. Are you kidding me? Yeah.
And the picture in the boomer mug is idol. Like, are you kidding me? He looks like freaking Rock Hudson or something. It's the Mick.
I mean, he's an idolized player. I mean, in the 50s and 60s, he was the premier player. Everybody looked after him. Every
Absolutely.
Kid. Him and Mays and Snyder, Aaron, those guys were huge. Yeah.
Jeffrey, do you have any other cool Mickey stuff?
No, that's the only thing I got. My buddy gave it to me a couple of weeks ago, and I was just like, holy crap. You know, I'm a big Yankee fan, but I've never had anything like this. And I was like, I don't know if I want to get rid of it or just... It's so cool.
I would just keep it. I mean, it's a cool piece. I don't think it's worth any big, significant amount of money, but it's just nice to have.
Jeffrey, before it's we let you cool. go, the Yanks are on pace for 89 wins right now. Do you think they can do any better than that?
Absolutely.
I hope you're right.
So. Yeah, I hope you're right, too.
I saw Derek Jeter was putting some pressure on Brian Cashman last night during the All-Star game, and he said he thought Cashman would be going all in before the trade deadline. I mean, I think you need a left side of your infield, I would assume.
Yes.
Yeah. But when I was a kid, I saw Willie Randolph here in Odiana on the Odiana Yankees. I've seen a lot of, old Yankees play here in Odiana. Back in the days.
We'll talk maybe about that after we take our first break of Vox Pop. We're talking about comic books and baseball cards today, and we welcome your calls 1-800-348-2551 or voxpop@wamc.org on the email. It's WAMC's Vox Pop Show 221. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. I'm Ian Pickus sitting in today, and we've got Bill Townsend of Electric City Comics and Al Itzkoff from Al's House of Sports Cards joining us in the studio today. Your calls are welcome, 1-800-348-2551 or voxpop@wamc.org. During the break, you guys were talking about what's holding value and what's gaining value. Could you recap that for our listeners? You were saying, I couldn't exactly follow it, Bill, but there's something. what was the term you used?
Well, I mean, what I was more talking about was like generations of collectors.
Uh-huh.
The Mickey Mantle rookie card is really big with people in the baby boomer generation.
Right.
But Honus Wagner, who really remembers him?
A lot of people have passed away that play.
But by the same token...
He's just an iconic player.
The same token, the comic books of the early Silver Age, circa 1960, are starting to see really big prices at auction. $1 million prices. The first appearance of Spider-Man, which is Amazing Fantasy 15. Fantastic Four number one. Amazing Spider-Man number one have gotten $1 million prices at auctions. And I think, no... Something that's been printed since I've been alive, that can't be that expensive. Well, it is.
No, it is in high grades. I mean, they were meant to be as a toy. Read it, throw it away, fold it.
That's the thing. Comics were treated as junk for
years. Complete junk. They were just entertainment.
And you, like, throw it out.
It's not like they use high quality paper to make comics.
No, they didn't.
I mean, that paper was brittle.
So what I hear you both saying is, like, scarcity is a real point here. I mean, if there are only 12 of the Honus Wagner cards that you got in a pack of tobacco, then those are going to be worth a lot and a lot of money.
Yeah, the T206 is one of the rarest cards.
That's the Honus Wagner, and it's drawn. It's like a painting of them, right?
It also has to do with how perishable paper is.
Uh-huh.
I think the Action Comics that sold for $6 million early in the year was like a 9.2 out of 10. It's like, well, that's a pretty nice copy. No, it is the best copy that exists now. There are no perfect copies of that book. Age just takes it away.
Well, there's restored copies, but some people don't like restored comics.
Well, that's kind of a really murky territory there. It's like...
Yeah. They do have a lot of restored stuff that goes for
inexpensively. Yeah, but if you slab it, it has to say restored.
Oh, yeah, of course.
There's a difference in...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's like, if it's been... like, oh, this comic has been restored to a very fine. It appears to be a very fine, but you get to decide what it's really worth.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they go for less than unrestored comics. But people that want them and they can't afford the higher end stuff, they're going to buy a restored. It's better than having nothing.
So how is it determined what kind of shape something's in? Because, you know, I've seen 1,000 baseball cards in comic books. They all look pretty good to me.
They color the cards, you know. They add stuff to them. I mean, in comics, too. They do that with
both,
all
that. Cards and comics are graded on a 10 scale.
Yes.
And basically, I know how it is for comics. 9.9 and 10.0 do not exist.
Uh-huh.
It's a type of perfection that only exists in heaven, not here on Earth. So 9.8 is generally the best you can hope for. And the pricing increases logarithmically. A 9.2 is a very nice near-mint comic. But if you get to a 9.8, it can be worth 10, 20, 30 times as much as the 9.2, which is still in near-mint.
Are there ever disputes about the scale?
Oh,
all the time.
Yeah.
Have I opened Pandora's box here?
Yeah. People argue all the time about graded cards. You know, people get a 10, and some people look at it and go, well, how did this get a 10?
A lot of
and
times
mine
people,
got a 9.
People, you know, will get a graded book, and then they'll break it out and send it back.
They'll get it pressed or cleaned.
Yeah.
Oh, they pay the extra money to get that service done.
It's like, yeah. It was a 9.2. I sent it back. It came back at an 8.9. How can they do that to me? And then they break it out and send it back. Oh, now it's a 9.3. So it's like...
Some people play the game, you know. They just keep sending it and sending it until they get the grade they want. But that could get very expensive.
Yes, it could.
Very expensive.
Do any of the companies that are involved in creating these hedge against some sort of future spike in interest by setting aside, let's say, here's a new comic guy. He's a radio host, and this is radio host number one, and we'll put like 50 of them in storage just in case radio host takes off.
I wonder what his secret identity is.
Yeah. Ray Graff.
Yeah.
By day, he's not that mild-mannered.
Yeah.
No, but like, so could we keep a store of you know, mint cards that maybe could be added to the population later or something?
Well, the discoveries have been made, and people found beautiful cards, and they got them graded, and some of them were so rare, there was only a population of one and some or two. I mean, that stuff does happen from time to time. I mean, people do put things aside. They forget them.
You put them in
they
a
move
drawer.
Or, you know.
But the comic makers don't do that stuff at all.
Well, warehouses, right?
If they sell out of something, they'll immediately go for a second printing these days. And almost all of the rare expensive books I was talking about, the Fantastic Four 1, Amazing Spider-Man 1, they're available in trade paperbacks.
Mm-hmm.
And back when I first opened in the early 80s, $7 out of $10 that was spent at my store was spent on back issues. Now, it was like 70%. Now it's at best 7%. Because the comic book publishers said, some guy comes into a comic store and they only spend $3 on new comics? No, we got to make it $9.98 on new comics. But the thing is like, who bought the old comics that are sold in the aftermarket? It's like comic stores. It's like...
But Comic-Cons, Bill, rely on back issues.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's their business.
Right, because we're all nostalgic for something.
Yeah, of
course. That's what it comes down to. Let me ask a Mickey Mantle question of Al before we go to our next call.
Sure.
In 12th grade, you know, I was like a baseball mad kid, and I had a teacher who was moving, so he was offloading his cards before moving to Alaska. Great guy.
Wow.
And he let me look through them all, and he had the back end of all those guys you mentioned. Late era, no knees, Mickey Mantle, Mets era, Willie Mays. You know, at the end of their career.
Yeah, so you had like the late 60s stuff, early 70s.
When the colors started getting a little wacky.
Yeah, the 70s.
Yeah, so are those worth anything? Or are those, because everyone loves the rookie card, but what about the broken down Mickey Mantle card?
People like the cards from like 1965 to 1969. His last card is 69 tops, so yeah, that's an iconic card. They made it in two variations.
Interesting.
The white letter and the regular, you know?
Huh.
It's a great card to have. It's got all these stats in the back, everything. It's a cool card.
I don't want to get in any trouble, but while I have the chance to do it, I did interview Mr. Ripken, who is the subject of a very famous card that has a bad word on the bottom of the bat.
Yeah, the F-face card.
And I didn't ask him about it, but do you see any of those in your trade these days? Are they still around?
Yes, people like that. People really enjoy those errors, but nobody talks about the Randy Johnson Marlboro error.
Well, tell me about that.
Which is, there's a Marlboro ad in the back of 1989 Fleer Randy Johnson's rookie card. So if you look at his rookie card, it's blacked out. But certain copies, you can see the Marlboro ad in the back. And that's highly desirable.
Okay. And so was that at like Olympic Stadium or something? Was he on the Expos?
Yeah. I think so. Yeah.
Interesting. I might have that one.
But the funny part is Mark McGwire's rookie card, if you look at it, the 85 Topps USA card, the Marlboro is clear as day. So a couple of years later, they made it so bad that they blocked it out. But if you look at McGwire's rookie, you could see the Marlboro in the background.
Interesting.
Isn't that interesting?
I'm trying to picture it right now. I know I've seen that card.
It reminds me of a printing error. There was an issue of All-Star Batman where there was a lot of cursing and they blacked it out. But there was a printing error in that the blackouts were not opaque.
Oh, no.
So you could read all the bad words. It's like, so they had to come out with a second printing where the black was really black.
Wow. And have you seen that in person? Is that
around? It's like when we saw it, I go, hey, what's going on here? And that variant is worth more. The error variant is worth more than the second printing variant.
I don't remember Adam West swearing a lot on that.
Well, no. This is like circa 2005.
Okay. This is well past Leapin' Lizards, Robin kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Al, you were going to say?
Oh, I was going to say the 89 Fleer card, the Billy Ripken card, it's very, very famous card. But they also made the box card, they corrected it a bunch of different times. So there's all sorts of variations of that card. But everybody wants the actual writing on the bat knob.
Yeah.
The obscenity they want.
You know, I was talking with somebody about this, and there was an interview with Billy Ripken, and he has no memory of any of this. It's like I was just getting my picture taken. Someone handed me a bat.
Yeah.
There you go.
Next thing you know, he's got one of the most famous cards.
Yeah, he does. That's that card is so desirable. And it's the same year Ken Griffey Jr. was rookie. More people want the Billy Ripken card than anything else.
And Billy Ripken was a grinder, right? But he wasn't an all-time great player, for sure.
He stuck around, but he wasn't like Cal. He wasn't like his brother.
No. Well, let's go to Dan now, who's in Schenectady. Dan, you're up.
Hi. I have a comic question for Bill about grading comics and slabbing them and what he thinks about the practice of charging you to grade a comic based on its value.
Okay. I'm kind of not in step with the majority of people. I am not a big believer in slab comic books.
Now, what does that mean?
Basically, what happens is you send it off to a grading service and it comes back slabbed in plastic with a holographic card that gives you the grade.
Uh-huh.
But it also can say things like, this book has been tampered with.
Oh.
It's the same thing for coins, and I'm sure for cards.
Yeah, it's good to say restored.
Yeah, it's good. It's got to say restored.
Or it's,
and they don't do this for free. And from what I understand, they have an enormous backlog.
Hmm.
So if you send off your book, it's like, well, you may have to wait 6 months to get it back.
And then it's in the slab forever, basically?
But it's slab forever. And my problem with that is that a slabbed card, you can look at the front, you can look at the back, you can see everything there is to enjoy about the card. Slab comic, you can't read.
Right, because nothing's in there.
Yeah. But
yes, Dan, go.
My point was more like if you send in a comic that's worth $100, they may charge you $25. But if you send in a comic that's worth $10,000, they're going to charge you $1,000.
Mm,
they're doing the exact same thing. They're just basing the fee that they charge you for doing the exact same service based on the value of the comic.
See, that seems wrong to me.
That's why I don't have any slab comics.
That seems wrong to me, and I've seen plenty of people selling slab comics that are essentially, the comics themselves are valueless. You're essentially paying, say, $200.
For some plastic.
For the plastic. Sure. It's like somebody was selling a copy of Wildcats number one for $295. And I go, that comic's worth $2.95.
Yeah, $3 comic.
You're essentially paying for the slab and the grading. So that I mean, and I'm pretty sure that wasn't the case some years ago, that basically it was just a flat fee. It's like it's $50 to slab a book, and they're not charging based on what the value of the book is.
So what's your plan for taking care of a comic book that, you know, you might think has value or it's important without slabbing it?
I've talked to people who are involved with slabbing, and here's something that just kind of made my eyes bug out. Just because a comic book is sealed in plastic doesn't mean that it's free from any kind of decay. Mm-hmm. And they recommend that some books need to be re-slabbed every so often.
Wow.
So it's like, so they're not even safe in these plastic tombs that you've got them in?
I mean, everything decays eventually, right? Well, it depends on what the time horizon is.
I mean, the paper in comics is designed to decay. Yeah. Like, newsprint is very acidic. I spend entirely too much time learning about the chemistry of paper. So in terms of you can keep a comic in good condition without slabbing it.
Mm-hmm.
One of the most famous comic book collections is the collection called the Mile High Collection.
Oh, that's a big-time collection.
Yeah, big-time collection, very famous.
That's Colorado, the man.
Yeah, and basically comics were preserved by the arid, cool air of the Rockies.
Ah.
Basically, heat and moisture are the two big enemies of comics, and I'm sure of cards too.
Yes.
Good news for Todd Helton fans, I guess.
Yeah. So basically a cold, dry place like Alaska would be a great place to have cards and comics.
Dan, before we let you go, what's your prized possession?
I have a complete run of the original Silver Surfer. That's probably my best.
Oh, my God.
Those are beautiful.
Those eyes just went up.
But there was a teacher.
Yeah,
I went to Niskayuna High School. There was a teacher there named Elio Del Setti who taught a course on American pop culture, and it was centered around that run of Silver Surfer.
Wow.
How did you get them?
Yeah, there's some icon. I've just collected them over the years and here and there in comic book stores and. But I have them in sleeves and, you know, bags. But every time I think about, you know, maybe getting them graded, my issue with it is they're performing the exact same function. They're just charging you more because the comic's more valuable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's like taking your car to get an oil change.
Well, it's called an upcharge. That's what that is.
We're going to charge you $1,000 for an oil change.
That's an upcharge.
Yeah, no, I mean,
it's an upcharge. You can submit comics, and if it's valuable, it's the same for the cards.
But
if you get a 9, they're going to upcharge you. You submit a service for $25, but let's say a grading service sees that, oh, man, that's a 9. That's a couple grand right there. We're not going to charge you $25.
Right, but they did the exact same thing for a card that they graded a 4.
Yeah, it's almost like we need a blind grader who doesn't know the value of it, you know?
Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, that's a very good metaphor he came up with. It's like it should cost exactly the same amount of money to get your oil changed no matter what your car is, but it's like, oh, to change the oil in this Rolls Royce, it's going to cost $12,000. Sorry.
I haven't had that experience yet.
Yeah, neither have I.
Dan, thank you. Thanks so much for calling in. Really appreciate it.
Thanks.
Yeah. So here's another baseball-based question. One of the earlier callers was talking about the Oneonta Yankees, and, you know, you got a chance to rub elbows. The Albany Colony Yankees were here when I was little, and, of course, a lot of those dynasty players came right through town. So
yes, I used to go to those, and, I mean, we had unbelievable talent. You have Jeter here.
Mariano Rivera.
Pettit was here. Reggie Jackson came once. Ron Guidry got his rehab here.
Right.
He was here when he was injured. He pitched for a couple weeks.
So is my Albany Colony Yankees Tate Seafried card from like 1994 that I held on to, is that going to have any value?
Actually, if you have a 1995 yearbook with the cards inside, and one of the cards is Jeter, that's worth several hundred dollars.
I got that card. He's standing on a diamond, kind of like this, it looks like. I definitely held on to that stuff. And then I've got Mariano Rivera signed, like, the ticket package, you know, like the envelope that the tickets came in. And I do wish I had done a little better job back then, just knowing.
Yeah, the programs are worth quite a bit of money, actually, because a lot of them weren't even saved. They were just thrown away or... But there's inserts inside the program, which are highly desirable.
Interesting.
Yeah, they got to be in nice shape, though.
So what's a growing area in sports cards now? Like, what's the if we're talking about Mickey Mantle having a hold on the boomers, but the next generation, you know, some of those guys are kind of problematic, you know, like
I'm seeing a lot of people that collecting sets and, you know, in my shop, they're looking for certain cards or they collect team sets.
Mm-hmm.
They're collecting their favorite players, that kind of thing. And then you also have people that are just investors. They just, all they want is the rookie cards, and they're hoping that they're going to hit a home run with them, you know. If the rookie card does well, you know, if the player does great, so is the price of the card. It just goes up.
One more thing before we go to our break, which is these cards that have, like, the jersey, a little piece of the jersey in the card, or, like, the hardwood from the basketball court. They're kind of gimmicky, I think, but are they hot right now?
Unfortunately, they were hot in the mid-90s and 2000s when they were actually real. Like, there was a real game jersey.
Yeah.
If you look in the back of the card, it just says a souvenir. Back then, Upper Deck, back in the day, it would say game-worn jersey. An actual piece from the player.
Yeah.
Now you look at them, it's like a souvenir patch.
Oh,
so, you
what's
know,
the point of that?
It, you know, a player could just put, you know, 20 jerseys on sitting down and it could be called, you know, souvenir. But back then they actually had to wear them and it was game used.
Interesting.
They don't do that anymore unless it's like a super high-end product.
Well, I don't think the game-used WMC hat from today's Vox Pop is going to Cooperstown. But in the meantime, we can take your calls, 800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. We're talking about comic books and baseball cards. And we'll be back for the home stretch of the show. You can send your questions in, voxpop@wamc.org. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Time is 2:44. We're hanging out today with Bill Townsend from Electric City Comics and Al Itzkoff from Al's House of Sports Cards. Okay, I saved it for this part of the show, and we'll take your calls, 800-348-2551. But I want to hear each of your origin story, because everyone has one for collecting or for getting the bug. So who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
All right.
Yeah, go ahead.
I started reading comic books back in 1967. The very first comic I got was in 1967. But my real origin story is when I had my tonsils taken out in second grade.
And you had some time.
I was like homesick, and my dad got me some comics, and he had no idea what I read. So he just got one of everything. And I was a big DC fan because I really liked Superman. But then I saw what Marvel was doing at the time. This is like circa 1969. And some of the crazy stuff like Jim Steranko and Jack Kirby were doing. And I remember reading some of these things and I go, this is way over my head. It's like, I don't understand what's going on here.
Bill, is it true that DC is a little bit scarcer than Marvel?
Do you know what's scarcer than DC comic books? People that want to collect DC comic books.
Why is that?
You know, I don't know. You can say all sorts of things. I think the DC really ruined their continuity. Because something everyone remembers is the death of Superman back in 1993.
Yeah, I remember.
Everybody bought that comic book.
But the fact is that really isn't worth much of anything now, because Superman has died two more times since then. And the current Superman is really the Superman that died in 1993, somehow brought back through some sort of time thing.
Huh.
And it's like, I can't even explain this continuity to you. So how can people who are fans of the book explain it to themselves?
Yeah, that doesn't make sense.
It doesn't. And also, the people that are running DC Comics right now, I'd call them idiots, but I think that I would be defaming idiots to do so. And that's why I'm so glad that the Superman movie seems to be a good thing.
So with the growth of the Hollywood boom of comic book movies in the past 20 years, is Marvel outpacing DC on the big screen too?
It is, and it isn't. Marvel has recently had a bunch of less than successful movies,
mm-hmm.
but they put out so many more. DC has had some unsuccessful movies, and this is a story from, I think, last year. They filmed a Batgirl movie.
And then shelved it, right?
And then they shelved it without anyone seeing it. And from what I understand, it was pretty good. But they said, no, we'll take the tax write-off. And it's like, and all the fans go, thanks for nothing.
Yeah, and we were excited about it for 3 years or whatever.
Yeah, and by the same, there was also a Roadrunner Coyote movie. It was basically Coyote versus Acme. It was a court case.
I didn't know
him,
that.
Him suing Acme Comics for, no, not Acme Comics, but Acme Manufacturing for all of the things he bought that blew up in his face. And from what I understand, that was an entertaining movie too. Once again, got shelved for a tax write-off.
Wow.
And it's like, why make movies if you're going to do that?
How are the X-Men doing these days?
The X-Men are not... Basically, the blue chip comic right now is Amazing Spider-Man.
Okay.
X-Men kind of burn hot and cold. But I mean, I remember back in the late 70s, X-Men were it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
X-Men literally almost single-handedly saved Marvel Comics.
Do they still cross over with Spider-Man? Because I remember that happening at one
point. They're all part of the same universe. Mm-hmm. But... continuity is a big mess right now. You get movies like Into the Spider-Verse where there's like six Spider-Man from six different universes.
Yeah, and they have a meme where they're all pointing at each other.
Yeah, and you'll also have a Spider-Man movie which has like Elijah Wood and Andrew Garfield and Tom Holland all like interacting with each other as a different version of Peter Parker.
Is Secret War still really hot?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that issue number 8, right?
Issue number eight, the first appearance of Venom.
Oh.
Actually, an original page from that, and actually the original page where Spider-Man puts on the costume, I think recently went at auction for $3
million. Holy moly.
Comic original art is huge. Getting huge prices.
That's big money.
And also, it's like... with art, it's really unusual because condition doesn't matter because you've got the only copy.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, oh, look, here's where the artist set down his coffee cup.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's the only...
You control the market.
It's the only page that there is.
Exactly. Now, where do you get that? Because, I mean, a comic book is, as you said, it's printed and then it's shipped out and it goes in the store.
That's a whole different
animal.
Where
do you get the art
from? Wow. I got a lot of original art myself. Most of it I bought from the creators themselves.
Wow, cool.
Basically, it was considered kind of a retirement fund for artists. It's like after the page is printed, they get the original art back with a little copyright notice on the back saying, you can't republish this, but you can sell the original.
Is it true, Bill, that in the Comic Cons, they would set up and just sell their original art?
Oh, yeah.
By the piles? They say there were pages of that stuff back in the 70s and 80s.
Oh, yeah.
It was out there.
I mean, I remember Joe Sinnott, the late Joe Sinnott.
Oh, he was great.
He had a big pile of pages. He was selling them for like $5 a piece. And these were original pages from like Defenders and things like that.
Wow.
Are kids getting into Stranger Things in any of the comic universe? Because I know that is...
There is a Stranger Things comic.
Is it any good?
It's as good as the TV show.
Okay. So Eye of the Beholder, maybe?
Yeah.
But are people like, because that is the biggest thing that Netflix ever made, does that translate to people picking up the comic?
It's several years on. The comic doesn't sell as well as it used to. Mm-hmm. But then again, what does?
Right. We have to also get Al's origin story. I left that hanging. So what was
your favorite player growing up, Ian?
Oh, he was turning it back on me.
Yeah.
I'm a Jeter guy. I mean, right. I think I don't make a secret of that.
Great player. Did everything right. I love that guy.
Yep. And I did see him in Albany. And I think he was here for 34 games. So it was like one summer. And I'm just the right age to have experienced that rise. And then the second one, and it is baseball card related.
Yeah.
I love David Cone. He was
Conehead.
A gutsy, gritty pitcher, and he had a lot of wiles out there.
Yeah.
But he had this Mets card from when he was on the 80s Mets that was K-Man. And they had like a whole line of those, and I think there was a Doc Gooden one. And,
Dr. K.
Yep, and I had a starting lineup, and a bunch of those actually, and those came with a coin. So that was... Yeah. That was something I collected.
Those
a
cards
lot
are actually pretty desirable in the lineups.
Okay.
Yeah, some in people get those graded. Yeah.
Okay.
They're tough because they didn't survive.
Right. They're all get like
they're
always
getting smushed. They're getting warped. You know.
I realize the key to this. I have a first cousin who's 5 years older than me. That's what you need. You got to have the person who passes it down to you when you're like 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then you get the pipeline of the slight generation right before you. For me, that was like Keith Hernandez, Don Mattingly. It's like just slightly before I had agency and following it.
Yeah, I love Don Mattingly. That was I used to enjoy watching him.
Oh, he's the best.
He was great.
He was the best.
He was great.
What from my era is still hot? I mean, do people want Sammy Sosa cards now that he's back in the good graces of the Cubs?
Nah, I still have Sammy Sosa. Rookies in like a $1, $2 bin.
What about Ichiro?
Yeah, Ichiro's pretty good. People still like him. Yeah, he's great. Hall of Famer.
Any of the Astros, like dynasty players, like Altuve, does he have a following?
I don't really sell too many Astros stuff.
No. Not in this area, probably.
Not in this area, no.
Down in Texas, I bet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And are people trending back toward the Mets around here because they've been
people,
so good lately?
Basically, Mets, Red Sox, Yankees, Dodgers, those are the desirable teams.
Yeah.
People come in and they look for that kind of stuff all the time.
Yankees have a timeless
Yankees
brand,
are just
right?
classic. It's just a great team.
Now, what about memorabilia? Because we talked a lot about cards. But if you had, let's say you were a big nerd like me and you had some dirt from Oakland Coliseum in a little baggie. And then last year they left Oakland.
most memorabilia. Well, you know what they did? Steiner used to do. They used to encapsulate dirt and then certify it and sell it.
Yeah.
Like years ago. But most people come in and they'll buy an autographed baseball, you know, certified, of course. But it's got to be done by JSA or PSA or, you know, they don't want it. It's got to be certified.
So is there a lot of, like, forgery out there and fraud?
There was a lot. It's getting better now because, you know, the companies are grading, authenticating. So it's way better now than it was years ago. Years ago, it was like the Wild West. You didn't have authenticity. You wrote out, my grandfather got this. Now it's like, okay. You know, my grandfather got that. You know, you need paperwork if you want to sell something.
Now, is a signed baseball still preferable to, like, a selfie with Aaron Judge? You know what I mean?
Well, at the shows, like, they have the National. Some people pay for that. They have, like, the picture taken and the autograph session. It's two different things, unless you want both. And then that could be costly.
Yeah, very costly.
I mean, some of these guys command hundreds of dollars. I mean, it's not cheap to
meet
these guys.
They got to make a little living in the retirement, I guess, when their knees go bad.
Of course.
Or whatever.
Of course.
Yeah. But I've noticed that, you know, those autographs and things like that, eventually if it's just something that you have on your mantle, it's a different relationship than, like, I want to spin this. I want to sell it.
Yeah.
Right?
Of course. If you have something significant, I highly recommend you get it authenticated, get a letter of authenticity, pay the money, get it done. That way it's legit. You know, if you have a Babe Ruth ball or a Lou Gehrig ball, you want to get paperwork for that.
That makes sense.
I mean, no one's going to believe it. I mean, that's a lot of money to spend, and you don't have anything to back it up.
Right. And then who knows what happens, like, you know, after your lifespan and you're passing on a bunch of things and they don't necessarily know who signed it or whatever.
Yes, right? Exactly. And that way they can look at the letter and it exactly will tell you what it is. Or they go in a database and just type in a number, a little hologram on the ball that will tell you what it is.
So
it's important to get, like, significant things authenticated.
We might have time for maybe one more call. I'm going to try to get Jim from Saratoga on. Jim, you're up.
Okay, I had two topics. The
Go
first
for it.
Was Salada Tea, I think it was. I have a bunch of these caps that have pictures of baseball players in them. And I think they were a plastic disc, is my recollection. Some of them were metal. And then the other thing I'd like to hear you talk about briefly is Zap Comics, which I enjoyed a lot, and I haven't heard you mention them. And I was just wondering, do people collect them, or are they a thing? And I'll just hang up and listen.
Okay, that's great. Thank you, Jim. And Bill, do you want to take Zap Comics first?
Zap Comics was an underground comic that came out in the late 60s and 70s. It is essentially one of the seminal comics. It's where a lot of the fondly remembered Robert Crumb stuff came from.
Okay.
Underground comics, my experience is they're not really expensive. And also, there was an underground comics price guide where these things were printed on the fly.
Mm.
So it's like, how do you tell the first printing from the seventh printing? Well, there are ways to tell, and this guide can show you how. But for the most part, whenever somebody comes in asking about underground comics, I show them what I have. And they go, wow, I remember these. These are really cool. And then they walk out without buying anything.
Oh.
So, and also they don't have much luck with trade paperback reprints of them. So there's something fondly remembered, but there's not really a market for them.
Well, I think that'll be the last word for today's show.
Al,
real quick, 30 seconds.
Okay. Salada teas.
Yes, thank you.
They made them in 1962, 1963. They came in teas, and some of them came as a presentation set. Some of them have very good value. You can get them graded by PCGS, or you can get them graded by PSA. I believe PSA will grade them. They have Mickey Mantle. They have all the, you know, the stars of the 60s in them. It's pretty nice set with variations, too.
Guys who are very rarely drinking tea, as it turns out.
Exactly. I mean, you can get commons for like a couple dollars, too. But obviously, Mickey Mantle and Merritt, all those guys are going to be worth a lot more.
Well, you were both all-stars today. I want to thank everybody who called in, and sorry to those who didn't get through. A big thanks to Bill Townsend of Electric City Comics and Al Itzkoff from Al's House of Sports Cards for joining us. Support for WAMC comes from the Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences in the Capital District and beyond, skidmore.edu/tang, and Capital Region Classical at the Darrow School, summer chamber music concerts, and an historic Shaker Tannery in the foothills of New Lebanon through September, capitalregionclassical.org. Thanks again for joining us on Vox Pop today. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by the great Ed Rosen. I'm Ian Pickus in today for Ray Graff. Tomorrow, we've got planned astronomy with Bob Berman and Dr. Valerie Rapson, 2 p.m. Thursday. Stay tuned now for a WAMC news program.